One of my son's bar mitzvahs, I acknowledged Rabbi Willick's presence, and I don't think I went overboard, but immediately afterwards he told me never do that again. So, Ritzono Shel Adam, Zehu Kvodo, just want to give Hakaras HaTov to Rabbi Willick. He is on a very, very busy schedule this morning, gave a shiur in Woodmere, is giving another shiur in DRS very soon, and then everything else that he has going on. So we thank him very much and look forward to hearing the shiur in Hilchos Pesach.
Okay. It's a beautiful experience to be able to say Shiurim before Yom Tov. I like that the Shiurim are what they call today interactive. If you have questions or comments, feel uninhibited. I don't bite. And if the question makes no sense, I'll respect it anyway. So don't feel any inhibitions. Feel free to ask anything you want. So before I even begin, there may be a particular topic which interests you, which is bothering you, you want to know how to handle it in the upcoming days of Pesach. Raise your hand right now. Yes, Eitan.
Rabbi, if considering the seriousness with which some of these local stores take the mechira, would it make more sense for us to buy our chametz before Pesach?
That's an excellent question. Let's talk a little bit about mechiras chametz. Mechiras chametz is an institution that is quite old. It wasn't something which the modern-day rabbis in America started. You know, we're always suspect of cutting corners in this country. This goes back before we came to this country. The truth is that there is some precedent for it even in Talmudic times, but not in the institutionalized way that we have it nowadays. Nowadays, the minhag is that individuals who wish to sell their chametz appoint the rabbi, they authorize the rabbi. The rabbi serves as their agent, and he sells the chametz to a non-Jew. After Pesach is over, if the non-Jew is willing to buy it back, so we buy it back from that non-Jew. In our community in Riverdale, so there's a particular non-Jew, his name is John Brown. We've been selling chametz to him for 40 years. He's very reliable. He understands what a sale is, understands the nuances of a sale. I'll just give one example. I tell Mr. Brown, every year I tell him, you know, Mr. Brown, there are individuals from my community or the various communities that come together to sell who are spending the end of Passover in points west. Take California, for example. And you understand, Mr. Brown, that if we meet after the Passover holiday is over here in New York City, and we buy back the chametz from you, this guy can't buy the chametz back. It's still, for another 3 hours, the sun is still shining. So what I'd like to do is we make the following understanding, that we'll go through the various methods of acquisition when I repurchase it, but it will not take effect until 3 hours later. So the action is now, and the effect is later. He says to me, sure, we have that all the time in my real estate business. We'll do a closing, or whatever the word is, now, but it won't take effect until January 1 for tax purposes. You know, it's better this way, that way, the other way. See, he's a businessman. He understands what it means, the nuances and the details of conditions with respect to buying and selling, which is excellent. He's also, as a real estate agent, is familiar with most of the houses, at least in our community in Riverdale. And based on the significant amount of business which he was received as an agent over all the years from our community, hopefully he has the money to pay, if necessary, given the fact that he's bought the chametz. So far, every single year when Passover is over, he has the same response. He says, Mr. Brown, says in the document, you give one pruta per person right now. And a pruta, we always say a pruta is a penny. For most of my years in my rabbinate, the pruta was a half a penny. The silver was cheap, except when there was one major spike when the Hunt brothers cornered the market with a Ponzi scheme. Remember that one? That's a long time ago. And it went up to, silver was skyrocketing. Even a nickel, it wasn't. It was a dime, because the nickel wasn't even enough. Now it's, I think, around 2 cents will probably do the trick for a pruta. So it's a question of how much silver. So we give that. The rest is due, you know, on the last day of Pesach. So he comes and meets me after Motzei Yontif. I said, Mr. Brown, you know, this is the time. Rabbi, I find myself in an illiquid position, which means he has enough money to pay for it, but he doesn't want to get out of his stocks and his real estate, and therefore he chooses on his own, of course, to sell it back to us, which is fine. That's wonderful. So he's a very sophisticated individual, and I think it's very important that we do that. Unfortunately, for reasons which are beyond my understanding, Rabbanim, who are much greater than me, way greater, they had this funny habit of selling it to the superintendent or whatever convenient non-Jew they found around. He doesn't understand what it's all about. English sometimes. He doesn't understand the language in some of these situations. I don't understand why they're doing such things. I try to get someone who understands English perfectly, and we have long conversations, and I think that's the biggest hider in Mechiras Chametz is the goy. That's the biggest hider, because if he's on board, then you know the sale is good. Eitan is implying that some of the sales are not up to snuff. So, stores. It depends what store you're talking about. A store, like for example, under the Vat in the Five Towns, I'm sure all the stores are sell Kedasa Kedin. And they're obviously not in business using Chametz on Pesach. Unfortunately, there are many stores Jewishly owned, and these Jewish stores are open on Pesach. They want to sell the chametz anyway. Rav Moshe is a tshuva about that. Rav Moshe writes that the sale is valid, and whatever they had before Pesach, and they still have it after Pesach, he claims you can eat that after Pesach. He's open for business and selling things all he wants. Okay, he's a thief, but the sale is still a valid sale. My Rebbe of Soloveitchik Zatzal was not into that. He said a store that stays open on Pesach is open for business as usual. It's an indication that he never really meant to sell anything. Perhaps that's what Eitan was referring to, some of the stores that are not being sold properly. Then you really can't buy it. First of all, my Rebbe may be right. Second of all, how do you know when he got it? If he got it on Pesach, then the original sale didn't do any good, because there were those who sell the whole company. You sell the whole company, so whatever comes in is owned by a non-Jew. The problem often is the Jewish person is still on site. And the question becomes, how is it possible that the chametz belongs to the, when it comes in for delivery, belongs to the non-Jew, if the Jew is actually taking it in? There's a whole discussion about this. Ein shlichus l'goy. You can't say that the Jewish fellow is the shliach. There were those who claimed, based on the Machna Ephraim, that yad pol ki yad balabayis applies even in the case of a non-Jew, and since the person is being paid, it works. You can argue one way or the other whether these kinds of situations are effective. We try to do the best we can. There's a whole tumult about some of the distributors. I think it's called CNS or other huge distributors. What do you do with them? So they've recently apparently undergone a better level of sale. I'm not here to paskin one way or the other, but I think that we should better rely on a sale done by a Rav who knows what he's doing than to go buy up chametz in advance so it should be in our house so that we should be used by be mutter by the sale of our own personal Rav. Just rubs me the wrong way to go buy chametz and pesach bedafka so you should be able to sell it. Some, if you're a storekeeper, then of course it's mutter, that's a parnasa. So there are many storekeepers who do exactly that. They buy up the chametz before Pesach, and then they sell it, and as soon as Yontem is over, it's all there. I think that's a perfectly legitimate position for a storekeeper. But for a private citizen, I find it a little distasteful. Yes, Rabbi?
Is that a violation of Rotsu
B'Kiyumo
if you buy in
advance? Rotsu B'Kiyumo is an interesting question. This is an issue which applies even in the situation of the private citizen. I sell my chametz to the goy. I'm rotzeh b'kiyumah, because what will happen if the chametz will suddenly burn down? So it's interesting, in our document, we have a long document, and one of the lines which in the document is an interesting, very, I guess, somewhat questionable line. It says, risk of loss or loss of value is borne by the buyer, the non-Jew. And that's put in there, so it shouldn't be a question of rotzeh b'kiyumah, shouldn't be a question of achrayis, that we have responsibility for it. Because the Gemara has a Masechta Pesachim, if this chametz belongs to a goy, but the Yisrael has some measure of achrayis, of responsibility, it's a problem. Although, most poskim assume, Tosfos Dav Vav, that does not apply if the chametz is found in the land owned by the non-Jew, and according to most authorities, even if it's leased to the non-Jew. That's one of the reasons that we lease the areas that the Hamas is, in which the Hamas is found, to the non-Jew. That's reason number one. Reason number two is that facilitates the actual acquisition by the non-Jew. There, not one kinyan, not one method of acquisition is unanimously accepted as being effective with respect to a Jew and a non-Jew. Not one. You name it, I'll find you someone who disagrees. But you know, we play the laws of statistics. We, I think, perform six or seven kinyanim on the chametz. Just to give an example, what we do. First thing we do, what I said before, the non-Jew gives 2 cents, which is a pruta for every person who's selling him the chametz. Then we shake hands. That's called situmta, the method of acquisition, which is common practice. Then it's what's called chalipin. Chalipin means the non-Jew gives me something of value. Usually gives me his penknife. I pick it up. That's chalipin. And then we have this leasing of the property, and that the property itself is given over by those same three methods, because karka is also nicknamed with kesef, mishnah kimesech to kiddushin, and with chalipin, and we also use what's called situmta, and we use shtar. A shtar, a document, cannot itself work for metal and for movables, but it can work for the leasing of the property. And then, before we actually do that leasing, we enunciate that we are going to transfer the movables incidental to the real estate. That's called kinyan agav, literally agav karka. This, of course, always elicits a smile from Mr. Brown, who's a real estate agent. We tell him that in Jewish law, movables are considered secondary to real estate. Ah, he always says, makes his day. Okay. After we do that leasing, we then say, oh, well, now, Mr. Brown, that you've leased the properties, whatever's in there, you acquire by virtue of what we call in our language, kinyan chatzer. It's an additional kinyan. Whatever's in your chatzer belongs to you. So therefore, many kinyanim, not one of them is unanimously accepted. Not one. Kesef is machlokos of Yochanan Mishlokish, and it's a Rashi with the Rebbe Ben Atam, with the Rambam. It's a whole arichus. Chalipin is a question. There's also fun of Yisrael, it works by a non-Jew, it's a Tois and Kedushin also about that. You talk about Situmta, someone says it's only the Rabbanan, it wouldn't work, the Rabbanan don't work for the Raisis. Chotze seems to be a Mefurash Gemara in Avodah Zarah that it works, but some say not quite. Some say it only works for a non-Jewish woman, because it's derived from Get. The first few years before when I first moved to Riverdale, we had a non-Jewish woman who lived downstairs from me in a two-family house, and we used to use her services. She was also an intelligent woman. It came to shaking her hand, so I was makel to shake her hand. You know, that was only a few Riverdale rabbis at the time. Today we have many, many more rabbis coming. It would be raised a few more eyebrows, but she moved out, and we got to know Mr. Brown, who was a real estate agent for our shul. That's how we got to know him, through one of the balabatim, but dealt with him extensively, and he's been on board ever since. So I think that last year was his 40th year, if I'm not mistaken, if I have it right. So, okay, enough stories about that. So the mechiras chametz, I believe, works, and I sell chametz b'en, because if you really believe in it, you believe in it, so it works. You can sell bread. If it doesn't work, then you shouldn't be selling anything. I have many people saying, we don't sell chametz b'en. No, we have a Kabbalah. What about that whole whiskey closet? Oh, whoa, whiskey. Whiskey is different. You know, whiskey is different. If you ask me, you should break all the bottles and throw them in and pour them down the sewer. Oil law. I'm not discussing Pesach. People ask you, is the whiskey chametz of a Pesach? I say, yes. I always say right away, yes. Maybe I'll throw it out. Whiskey is this bane of existence. Did you read about Mike Pence? Did you read about him? No one about Mike Pence? I'm more in touch than you guys. Just came this past week. Mike Pence, our esteemed vice president, said two things. Number one, he will never dine with another woman. Number two, he will never consume any alcohol unless his wife is sitting right next to him. They're making such fun of him and debasing, you know, the whole argument, you should get it. I plan to talk about it in Shabbos HaGadol. It's such an important thing about how the what they call the divide in views towards gender in America today. They're making fun of him. Well, he's a tzaddik. And he says, when he was elected to Congress, another guy was also, he moved his family to Washington. The other guy was kept him in Indiana, had an affair, destroyed his family, destroyed his kids, destroyed everything. Yeah. And the article says the word yichud in it. Orthodox Jews disallow yichud. Yeah, Y-I-C-H-U-D. It's in one of the Atlantic or wherever I got it from. So it's important. It's an important lesson to understand. I'm just mentioning in passing about drinking. So I don't think you should drink even if your wife is sitting next to you, but Kal v'chomer, she's not. Okay. Anyway, that takes care of Mechiras Chomer. So any other questions you want me to discuss before we go into other topics? Yes, sir?
If you're going to be away for
Pesach. Good. My Mechiras Chomer form has a special unit that goes along the way.
Nothing to do with Mechira. What should your approach be to cleaning your house?
So I'll tell you about that. It has to do with that. I'm answering the question. I have a separate part which says, fill if you'll be away the whole Pesach. There it says, I hereby lease, on the top it says, your where the chametz is found, how much it's worth, okay? And you're only leasing those parts of the house where the chametz is found, a pantry, a closet, a garage, whatever it may happen to be. Here, you lease out the entire home, everything. In that, you have to say where the keys are, because they're going away, how's he going to get in? Or in the absence of that, your cell phone number. That didn't exist when we started selling chametz. I have a cell phone number. So in case Mr. Brown wants to get into your house, he has to have the availability to get in. So you put down a key and or cell phone number. And if you do that, then according to most authorities, there's no need to do anything in the house. You can just leave the chametz strewn all over the place. The Mishnah Berurah paskins in end of Tuf Lamed Beis, it's preferred in such a circumstance to do the Mechira on Yud Gimel, which is before the all our Arba'asa, before the obligation of the Bedikas Chametz sets in. It's already now leased out to the non-Jew. That's the preferred way of doing it. And I do a Mechira, again, on Yud Gimel, not only for those individuals, but in particular where it's absolutely necessary for individuals who are found east of us, particularly in Eretz Yisrael, or even in Europe, because by the time I sell it over here, it's much too late. Okay? So I have a Mechiras Yud Gimel, which is for those who are traveling to the east, as well as for individuals who want to relieve themselves of the responsibility, the obligation of Bedikas Chametz, with the Mishnah Berurah, if you're selling on the 14th, it's a question. If you're selling on the 13th, it's much better. That's right.
So, if your wife says, going away from Pesach, so we don't have to vacuum, we don't have to sweep, we don't have to do anything.
Nothing, Shem, nothing. That's Simchas Yontov.
What if you're walking? And what if you're going to be walking into your house?
Now you're starting up. Before I get to that, the late Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, has a beautiful a 1 or 2 page summary of a shiur he gave, which someone took the notes. He said, you know, the women do spring cleaning and they're blaming it on Pesach. They shouldn't do that. He says, what are you looking for? You look for kezesim. You know, even the small kezias is still the size of an olive. You're not looking for crumbs. And he writes like this, Rabbi Schoenberg. The mitzvah of Simchas Yontov is the mitzvah min HaTorah, very likely. And men and women are obligated in that. But if the woman is a wreck, because she's just destroyed herself in all these pre-Pesach, what was it called, that song? I got the Here Come Pesach Blues, some of that was one of those CDs some while ago. And she's in the blues, and she's wrecked, and she falls asleep, and she has no Simchas Yomtiv. That's terrible. As the Shach says, every chumma leads to a kula. The chumma in Bedikas Chumma leads to a kula in Simchas Yomtiv. So, again, I'm not a big fan of going away to hotels. I am a fan of going away to parents or children. That I am a fan of, when it's appropriate. People have to go to hotels for family reasons. I'm not here to criticize. I know it exists, the phenomenon exists, and I know what you can't fight City Hall, maybe you can't fight the Shver, or the Freud, I don't know who you can't fight, but it exists, and you have to make sure it's a good Ashkacha. But if you're going away, the whole idea of going away, is for the whole Yontif, it seems to me, to spare yourself the terrible burden that people have of their version of Bedikas Chametz.
What? Bedikas with the children? Something?
Oh, Bedikah with the children. So, Rav Shechta Shlita Paskins, if you go into a hotel, and let's say you get there on Sunday, it's a week from today, that's the whole thing, guys. A week from today. You arrive in the hotel on Sunday, with your kids, and you left the house with, you know, full of chametz, you're required to do a bedikas chametz with a bracha in the hotel room. I heard it from his mouth to my ears, just again because it was a question of what he held. In which case, it shows the educational purpose of having your children experience a bedikas chametz as well. I got to bring 10 pieces. I said they just cleaned the whole room with a professional cleaning staff. It's absolutely clean, and you're going to make it dirty now. So he said, "Well, you take the crumbs and put them in tinfoil. You know, so shouldn't leave smaller crumbs around." Fine. A psak from an Adam Gadol. Not everyone agrees to that psak, but those who certainly can rely upon it if you want to do without a bracha to avoid other shilas, that could be done also. But you can fulfill the mitzvah. You know, others say it's a mokosh ein machnis and bochamas. Again, I've never been in these hotels, but apparently they do a very good job in cleaning up. Someone told me it's not such a good job. I don't know what the facts are. Someone said leave your beer in the refrigerator. Whoa. They should open the fridge and get rid of the beer. Spill it out, please. Before Pesach. Okay, so that's what should be done. It's an excellent question. Any other questions? Yes?
If the sale and lease is an actual transaction, which apparently it is,
yes.
Wouldn't one be able then to leave, if they're staying in their home for Pesach, leave their comments out in the open?
Very good question. Very good question. No, one may not stay in a house where there is chametz, even if it's owned by a non-Jew, without a mechitza separating between one from the other. Not allowed. So that's why, if you have chametz, which many of us do have, you have to separate it. How do you separate it? Well, you put it in a closet and tape it shut. You know, in my house is a closet with chametz, and it says, property of John J. Brown. And it's taped shut. Don't go near here. You know, some of my kids used to put poison signs, you know, there was all kinds of kids in the old days. So we make sure it's that.
It has to do with staying in the house, because if you go out and about on Yom Tov, a place with chametz that you actually see.
Well, you know, you really should try to avoid that. Sometimes you can't help it, but you should try to avoid it. But if it's in your house without a mechitza of significant separation, it's a problem to walk around in that kind of a house. You asked before about going into the house. Let's say a guy sold the chametz to Mr. Brown, and he's out the whole 8 days. He's by his parents' half, by his in-laws' half. Fine. He has to go in once to change his clothes, or do just to get the mail, or whatever it happens to be. So you try to create a corridor where you'll be able to go where there's no real chametz. You know, I don't have to do a bedikah, but to get to the mailbox or to get to the wardrobe, and try not to walk through the places where the chametz really is found. Okay, just go in quickly. You're not staying there. I think that's okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Considering that a lot of times you get together with a large family and there's children of many different ages. And
Baruch Hashem, hod l'Hashem ki tov.
You're really limited in what you can accomplish with your own children, perhaps, in terms of what messages you want to give over. So if you're limited, what would be perhaps a focus that we're trying
to... I will just give you how I grew up and how my children grew up, and now my grandchildren, I think, are growing up the same way. My father, Zichron Levracha, had his favorite stories, always with Mishalim and other things of this nature, mostly with the Dumna Magid, you know, those kind of, and he told us the same thing every single year. Every year, the same story. And you think, that's boring. No. Every year, we were waiting to hear that story. Without that story, it wouldn't be the same. So my children grew up the same way. My father's story, they had a few of my stories of my own, and we tell the same stories every year at the Seder. Kids are waiting for it, they want to hear it with a different nuance. And I say, you know, I think someone told me that every year 700 new Haggadahs come out. So someone told me. Every year 700 new Haggadahs come out. So Baruch Hashem, you can be up all night and then some. Be up all year just for two new Haggadahs. You need two Haggadahs for every night, 365 days a year. So, you know, that's for another time. The Seder is fundamentally, the main message of the Seder is Emunah, belief in God, belief in Hashgacha Pratis, belief in Mesorah. That's what the Seder is all about. All the fanciful gematrias and pulpulim, say that for the day meals or for Chalamoyed or so, the last days. Just bang it in to your own children. That's their obligation. Bang it in. Over, reinforce it. As the Mesilas Yesharim on page 1, not just, you have to reinforce it over and over and over again. Same stories. That's how I'd recommend that you do it. And the fact that there are other people around the table shouldn't take away from your ability to tell the same stories. You have your little few minutes, you can tell your stories, and maybe other members, siblings and siblings-in-law and parents, and they have their time. I do believe that the Seder shouldn't take too long for two reasons. One, because children are very limited in their patience. And two, there's that looming Chatzos deadline that is found in the Shulchan Aruch. And according to the Ramah, it even includes not just the Afikoma, but includes the Halal, presumably the fourth cup of wine. And you do a little Cheshbon, there's not that much time. There's not all that much time for the Magid. And if we like to sing too, singing is another highlight that children have. Whatever you do to keep them interested, the most important thing to do is have them sleep by day. That's the hardest part. Kids don't like to sleep. Kids don't like to nap. Come on, you bribe them, you pay them. Any way you get to beg them, cajole them to take a nap. I'll give you this, I'll give you that, whatever works. Because if a kid naps, they go. If they have a two-hour nap, they can go till 1 o'clock in the morning. That's what I found, even younger children. They're energized. That's my recommendation. Yes, sir. So he's asked me more than once, Rabbi, what would happen should I expire in the middle of the Passover holiday? That's what he asked me. I said, John, we pray for your health all year long, but especially during Passover. Yeah, but what would happen? I said, John, we would have to go to your heirs and see what they would do. Now, I've never met his heirs. I've met his wife many times. If she's probably the main heir, according to American law, she comes along with him. The story is fascinating. He was a real estate agent, and he always practiced in Riverdale. He lived in a place called Bronxville. Bronxville is, I don't know, a short drive up. When he was 50-something years old, he was convinced he was going to die, because both his father and grandfather died of heart attacks in the 50s. So he went, bought himself a house way up near the Canadian border, way upstate, to die. And my contact said, Rabbi, it's a problem. He just left. It was, I think, October. He left the practice. He's not only part-time, just from a distance. He went to die in the woods. We have to have a new, comes Pesach, we have to have a problem. Purim time, my friend says to me, the Balabas Mishul, Rabbi, he thinks that he didn't die over the winter. Perhaps it's in the merit of his deal that he has every year with the people of your community. He's coming back to do the deal. And now, ever since then, now he's, I think he passed 80 by now. So it's 20-something years that he is coming back from upstate New York. He makes a trip out of it. He comes back and does a little business in his real estate firm. And he goes to visit his children who live in D.C. But I got to tell you one more story, which is just too unbelievable. Rabbi, I'm going to be in Jerusalem this winter. John, Jerusalem? What's in Jerusalem? Yeah. I'm going to the bar mitzvah of my grandson. It's gracious me. Yep. It was an intermarriage. And so the next year, I say, well, you know what happened at the end of the day? My children and grandson, they canceled. They were afraid of the intifada. But my wife and I said, we're old enough, we're not afraid. We went. There's another PS to that. He was staying, I think, in the plaza. So Rav Shechta Shlita was in the plaza, and I had my son had to pick something up from him, my son Moshe, and met him in the plaza. He says, a familiar face. He says, is your name Mr. Brown? Yeah. You remember Mr. Brown that you bought the Chomets in Riverdale? My name is Moshe William. Yeah, yeah. What are you doing here? I'm here for my grandson's bar mitzvah. He almost killed him. So I met his wife many times. I never met any of his children, but if his wife should succeed him, I know how to deal with her. She always comes. She even comes in once in a while to use the facilities, and she's always reading books. She's a big, voracious reader. She reads. I come out afterwards to talk to her, both before Pesach, after Pesach. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I see how much time I have. Okay, I have a few minutes to talk about. Let's talk about some of the positive aspects of Pesach. This is one of the negatives of getting rid of the chametz. How about the mitzvah halayla? You heard a little bit about Tzipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's a very, very important mitzvah. Very important. And we should try our best to fulfill it to the best of our ability. There are a number of other mitzvahs that night. There's the mitzvah d'oraisa of Tzipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of the Torah. The only other mitzvah in the Torah is matzah. Matzah is a mitzvah in the Torah. Be'erav tochlu matzahs, there's a din d'oraisa. And we should try to fulfill it to the best of our ability. The minig is, in most places, not all, that we use hand matzah for the Seder. The reason for that is because it has to be lishma, and not everyone agrees that if you press a button on the machine, that can achieve the level of the shema which is required. I believe that, strictly speaking, it does. But nonetheless, following the minig of my father and all those who came before, I use hand matzahs. Hand matzahs. Hand matzahs, these are, I think, they're more expensive than rib steak per pound. Am I correct? I just bought my matzah, I think it cost me $28 a pound. Does steak cost that much? I don't know. Is there anything that costs that much in the whole world? Gold, yeah, but I mean, but food? Okay. I think there's something that's even more expensive than that, I'm told. Whatever it is. So you can afford to lust cost and once a year to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa, first night of Pesach. You have to have a kazayas. What's a kazayas? That's the next question. Kazayas, we know what a kazayas is. An olive. Olives aren't that big. Olives aren't that big. An olive, if you have a typical hand matzah, I made a calculation, I believe that an olive, the biggest olives, will be approximately 1/15 of that matzah. That's it. Zehu. So you can feed 15 people from that one matzah if you're going to give them each a kazayas. That's not what your children brought home from the school, let me tell you. Because they are using a kazayas as a percentage of a kibetza. Shulchan Aruch has a yesh omrim, the kazayas is a half a kibetza. Whoa. Have you ever seen an olive the size, one half the size of an egg? Have you ever, anyone in this room, ever seen such a big olive? I don't know where this really comes from. It comes from very super calculations of Steiris and Gemaris and Cheshbonis. Okay, let's assume you want to do that. How much is a kibetza? So we know what an egg looks like. If you measure displacement, which is volume, an egg is 50 cc's. Some average size egg is 50 cc's. Okay, so a half of that is 25, but the 50 cc's is with the shell, right? With the klipa. If you choose probably to measure without the klipa, and you take off a 10%, which is some posts can say, so you're left with 22.5 cc's. That's the shear, which is three times the real shear. So instead of having 1/15 of a matzah, it's approximately 1/5 of one of those matzahs. So I recommend, just to play it safe, to have 1/5 of the matzah for a kazayas. You want to have the two kazayas that the Shulchan Aruch recommends? No, 2/5. If your stomach is cast iron, you can handle it. No problem. So you'll end up with all the chumras with a sum total of one matzah. That's all bad. 2/5 of a matzah for the kazayas matzah. 1/5 for korech. It's only the rabbanon anyway. And you want to have two kazayas for afik kamen if you can still handle it at that point after you finish the chicken soup with the whatever else you ate at the meal. So vayta, okay? That's it. One big matzah per person. You don't need more than that. Okay? Again, it's smaller than all the charts. The machine matzahs, you have to have much more, about twice as much the machine matzahs because it's less dense. Just letting you know that. So instead of having 1/5, it would have to be 2/5. They've just doubled everything approximately for machine matzahs, for those who use machine matzahs for the Seder. Okay? Yes, sir.
Do we have to worry about Lachem or our parents' Seder or the matzahs?
On a simple level, number one, you probably don't even need Lachem, probably, if you go through the sugar carefully. And number two, if you do need Lachem, the assumption is that the Baal HaBayis, when he gives you the matzahs to eat, is giving it to you in a way that you can fulfill the mitzvah. So it becomes Lachem automatically. Eat one or the other. You want to be Mahader? Say, already Muchon Muzumon Liknos Matos Elu Bikola Kinyonim. You pick it up, Kinyon Hakbob, or three Tvachim off the. You want to Okay, you can do that if you want. Nothing wrong with that. But I don't. I never grew up that way in my house, and I don't like these new things. But if you want to do it, you have my brach. Okay, so that's the mitzvah of matzah, which is the mitzvah of the rice. Besides the sip, the only mitzvah of the rice we have on the first night of Pesach. Second night, of course, is the rabbanon, and everything is the rabbanon on the second night of Pesach. Good. There are many mitzvahs the rabbanon on Seder night. The Arba Kosas. Rav Moshe is a chumra nifla. You have to have wine as opposed to grape juice. And he explains, because wine is derech cheres, you know, if you have wine, that demonstrates freedom. Grape juice is, you know, doesn't demonstrate anything. He brings a raya from the Gemara in Masechta Nedarim that says that one of the Amoraim had a headache from Pesach to Shavuos in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Arba Kosas. Yes, so Moshe, why didn't he use grape juice? The answer is, no good. The poskim have commented that that's no raya. Because in those days, they would harvest the grapes Sukkot time, Chag HaOsif, and there was no way to preserve the grape juice from Sukkot till Pesach. It would spoil. Wine, it's fermented, doesn't spoil. So the fact that they didn't use it in those days proves nothing about the fact that grape juice is no good. My Rebbe said, if I have it right, Tabidavka, if you don't like wine, you should dafka use grape juice. For you, that's derecheres. But for those of us who enjoy wine, and I assume that most people in this room are in that category, but dafka, I think it's a hidur to have wine. Even for Kiddush, I think it's a hidur to have wine. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch writes about wine, the midst of Kiddush wine, it's ma'oreru mesameach. You know, it gives you a little zing and it makes you happy. Yayin esamach. So it's better to have wine than grape juice, I believe, even for Kiddush. I spoke before against consuming alcohol. I stick with that. I have alcohol twice a week. Friday night and Shabbos, I have a cup of wine. Havdalah I already make on grape juice. So if a person may have to drive and then it's time with Shiloh. Yes, sir?
What would you recommend for high school age children with regards to Arba Kosas?
Someone told me it's illegal to give your high school age children wine. I'm not a lawyer. Any lawyers in the room? No lawyers in the whole shul? What kind of shul is this?
They're lawyers, but they don't know the answer.
They're very loyal. They won't raise their hands. That's really a lawyer. I don't want to say anything against the law, but when I grew up, my father gave me, and I gave my children, I assume my children gave my grandchildren, and we won't, it's a Leil Shimurim. You know, Leil Shimurim is I think they give one for Kiddush too. That's not Leil Shimurim. I don't know what the law really says. Yes, sir?
Do we have to worry about the wine being mavushal or not?
I use only mavushal wine in my house. I'm afraid you never know who's going to walk in. I've had situations to say that people walked in and the problems touching the wine. And I know there are machmirim who want non-mavushals. I always say every chumah leads to a kula. So I use mavushal wine. If you don't, and the truth is, you want to use non-mavushal wine, you have to use wine with no sugar whatsoever. It's chor ho b'ho tayla. Rambam shita, that's mavushal's no good. So if you add sugar, it's also no good. It's not royal mizbeach. So those who are machmir. I don't have to be worried about it. Yes, sir? Yeah, I if you want to look it up, I have this in a. I'm not sure how you get it exactly. Pesach to go. Some years back, I wrote down exactly, you know, how many matzahs there are per pound, and how much you have to eat. So if you look there, I'm sure the rabbi can get it for you. He's an expert with technological stuff, which I'm not. So he can get it for you. Maybe he'll print it out for them and then put it on. You know, I can't vouch for my shurim are perfect, but I think they're fairly accurate. Well, I hope so. Okay. So what other mitzvahs do we have? Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm not, I don't know if we're done with matzah and
no, we're not done with anything. At 10 o'clock we're done. That's 3 minutes. But
I'm not sure if this is just my family, but I find that when I'm with people, brothers-in-law or father-in-law, that there's always a heated or somewhat heated conversation regarding marr, what to use for marr and how much to use for marr.
I'll give you my opinion. It says in the Gemara that there are five kinds of marr, and they all seem to be lettuce type. Endives is not quite lettuce, but the others are probably like lettuce. And in my view, that is what is marah. Horseradish, which is used by many people, in my view, is not marah. I'm sorry to say such a thing in a bold statement, because my father used horseradish for korech, not for marah. That's how many people do. And if you look in Gesher, written 40 years ago, or maybe more, by Dr. Schaefer, who was a biologist in now living in Eretz Yisrael, he wrote that he thinks it's all a mistake based on a mistranslation of the Haggadah Maimonides, And the reason they used it in Northern Europe, they couldn't get any greens. Nothing grew. You know, you think it's uncommon. Some Wayu Chumra. There's a beautiful sefer called Hilchos Chag B'Chag by Rabbi Moshe Mordechai Karp, one of the big Gedolim of Kiryat Sefer. He quotes this. He quotes from, Gesher, he says, he quotes this in his name, that he thinks it's a worthy Chumra. You know, he doesn't want to go against tradition. So what I do is, I have, as I, my father also had, for the Moro itself, we have lettuce. And for the Korech, we have a sandwich, but in stages. You have, you take a piece of matzah, you put lettuce on it. Kazayas of matzah, kazayas of lettuce. It's not so big a kazayas of lettuce. And you have the sandwich. At the other end of the sandwich, you put the horseradish. And then you have the horseradish. I would never be mevatel the horseradish. My father did it. My grandfather did it. I'm going to do it. But in my mind, it's not really part of the mitzvah. It's just a minig avosein b'yadenu. And part of the minig is, to go back to what you said before, is that the children should be in his bowl. My father would have the... He turned red as a beet. Go, fire, put out the fire. He was saying, this is what the kids look for every year. If the horseradish was not strong enough, we would have disappointed and my father's face didn't turn red. The same thing happened with my children, now the grandchildren. Baruch Hashem. I'm very much in favor of that. But if you ask me to be on a purely technical statement, I'm very concerned that it may not be real more.
Okay. The importance of bitterness for the mitzvah.
It's not bitter, it's sharp. It's not bitter, it's sharp. It's not bitter. Lettuce is also not bitter. So the Chazanish was makbid to leave it in the ground longer, so it turns bitter. We assume as long as it would turn bitter, even though it's not bitter, it's still okay. So watch out for the bugs. I found, if you buy grade A lettuce, even romaine lettuce, almost all of them are bug-free. We check. If you find bugs, throw the whole thing out. Don't even try to get rid of all the bugs. If you have the bad luck of an infested, just throw it out and buy a new one. It happened to us once. We found out, throw the whole thing out, went to the store, bought new ones. Okay, so my time is really up. I want to thank you all for giving me an opportunity to share some Divrei Torah about Pesach. This is, of course, Tein Lechochem V'yech Kamod. I want to say that you are blessed, Baruch Hashem, with the wonderful Rav, who is Marbitz Torah throughout the whole world. You're lucky to have him in your own Dalai Lamas. Teichel L'Talmud Chochem, Bracha.
Yeah, it's already online.